Thank you so much for choir and all the warm reception of today. I know now why Chris has Casey. He says, I won't stop asking you till you say yes. It worked great, didn't it? I was thinking, what would you do if you were preaching a sermon this morning? First of all, it's kind of a dreary time outside. And I know that some of you probably would like to go to sleep, but this is probably going to be the most comfortable place for you to do it. So I won't call on you for anything if you fall asleep. That's okay with me. But I do want you to smile a little bit, because sometimes I walk into churches, and of all places, it looks like everybody's been baptized in lemon juice. You ever notice that? I mean, like, it's okay to smile. It won't hurt anything. I'll give you something to smile about. And I was sitting here just thinking, I wonder what you think is behind this pulpit. So I'll just... You're watching, aren't you? Okay, let me show you. First of all, I see this. And then I'm thinking, do you wonder what else Steve hides behind here? So I found that. Got a battery. I don't know what the battery's for. It does expire to 2013. Got a light here if you need anything. Got a candle. I know this is old. Just saw that. That's got to be a little out of date. Well, we're just going to do a little spring cleaning here. If you need some crayons, we got the... Can you imagine? And that's not half of it, is it? Look under there. Somebody clean this thing out before next week, if you will. Everybody be chewing bubble gum. I'm a hot... That's really marbles. It looks like bubble gum, but it's marbles. Huh? It's good to see you. Let's see. What could we do this morning? I was just thinking... When I heard the prayer list, wow, you have a lot of people sick. That's a long, long list. And so what you can do, you can look at that list and then compare it to the people not here. The people not here, you can call them and ask them why they weren't here, because they weren't on the sick list. So that'd be okay. Tell them you're going to call the roll tonight. And if you're not here, please get somebody to tell her. It is good to see you. Just thinking about, you know, you can't always go to church, though. I was thinking about the two men that were out fishing one Wednesday night. They were in the boat fishing along, and all of a sudden the church bells rang. And Ben looked over to John and he said, John, you know, I really should be in church tonight. So the bells are ringing. He said, oh, I couldn't go anyway because my wife's homesick. Takes you a second to catch on, but you did great. It's like me trying to read a clock up there. I want to let you out on time. The best I can read, it says 10 after 11, right? Is that what it says? They say it says 10 or 12, but it really doesn't. Scripture for the morning is found in Matthew 14. Matthew chapter 14. I'll give you a little clue. If you have a pew Bible, and I got one of them too, so I can tell you, it's on page 849. You know, it's changed. I'm glad that we still have Bible school. It's difficult. It's difficult for a church that's a traditional type church like this church is, one team, to really be viable in these days, to have great attendance. We have these mega churches that have Wii games, that have bowling alleys, that have people up walking around while the minister's preaching, they're serving food and all that. It's hard to compete with those. It's very difficult. I went to one time and it was really interesting because while the minister was preaching, people walk around in the back eating donuts and all, I thought, I'd rather you just stay at home. If I'm going to speak, I guess that's kind of an ego trip, but I'm thinking somebody ought to be listening if you're up there speaking. So I think it's important that we realize that church is a place where God resides, in a special place. That's the only thing I have a problem with some of our churches is that, and I love what your bulletin says. It says, before the service, speak to each other. During the service, let God speak to you. And after that, speak to your neighbor. I'm okay with people talking in church before church because that shows that you're fellowshipping together. The problem I have in some places is that there seems to be no reverence in churches. And as I look at this story today, it's a beautiful story about Jesus coming to the disciples. He had just finished feeding a miracle, feeding 5,000 people. And then he's going to get in the boat. So I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 14, beginning with verse 21. And this ends the miracle, and I'm tying this together just so we can picture this together. And those who ate were about 5,000 men beside the women and children. Now that's an interesting count too, because there were probably more like 20,000 people there, because you know who? The only ones that counted were what? The men. Now just think about if we did that in our churches today, if we just counted the men, our attendance wouldn't look very good, would it? So I say, women, you count too, and the children, you count too. And our children may be 20% of our population today, but they're 100% of our future. And so we got to remember that it's important that we teach our children, that we let our children know that they're loved and that God loves them. Verse 22. It's talking about Jesus. Then he made the disciples get in the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat, by this time, was many furlongs distance from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out for fear. But immediately he spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Have no fear." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it really is you, bid me that I could just walk out on the water to you." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "O man of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you're the Son of God." Storms will come. I don't know if any of you do this. This has got to just be an old man's thing. But I like to watch storm stories sometimes on Friday and Saturday night. Did any of you do that on the Weather Channel? Nobody else. Boy, that's like watching paint dry on the wall, isn't it? It's just really not exciting to a lot of people. But I watch those, and there's some powerful storms that have happened in America over the many years that they're going back to record them. And I look, storms will come. Storms are going to come. Storms come in life. So what do? Even as Christians, we have storms coming in our life. And I should say, especially as Christians, you know, Jesus told us, he said, "Take up your cross and follow me." He didn't say, "Get in a chariot and ride." He said, "Take up your cross," which let us know in the very beginning that this is kind of a boot camp type thing, that it was not going to be an easy journey. That life is a journey, and for us as Christians, we're not exempt from problems and storms of life. Storms are going to come. I'd like to look at this story and point my finger at Simon Peter and say, "You of little faith, I can't believe you took your eyes off Jesus and you started sinking. You must not have very much faith." But I think that probably the person I identify most with is Simon Peter. Because I too, sometimes, many times, maybe most of the times, take my eyes off Jesus. I think I can do it on my own. Right now our world is in a storm. We're in a financial storm. People who were fairly well off, and I know plenty even by names, that had a lot of stock and large 401ks, and they were very wealthy a year or two ago, and now they have almost nothing. They're having trouble paying their mortgage because they never thought a storm would come. Storms are going to come. Financial storms, physical storms, all kinds of storms are going to come in our lives, and it's okay for us to prepare for the storm. Sometimes the storms come and we feel so battered by the storms. Here were the disciples. They were in the boat. They thought everything was okay. They're really on a small little sea. And so they thought they would go across the other side. But the wind started blowing and the boat started rocking and they were afraid. And that's exactly when Jesus came to them. They felt battered by the storm. They even thought that darkness had won. There are times in our lives when we can identify with that. As a hospital chaplain, I deal with death and dying every day. On this coming Tuesday night, we will have what is an annual, have it each year, a tribute service is for all the children that have been part of the hospital system that have died. Probably per square inch, there's more emotion in that meeting than anything that happens in this county, maybe even in this state. Because these are families whose children have died, and they're coming to the hospital with us so that we tell them that their children will never, never be forgotten. They will be remembered. And we pay a tribute to their lives. We show a picture of them with their permission. We call out their names. We turn off the lights in the room. And then each name, each child's name is called out, and the family turns on the light. And then you look around and see that you're not alone. A lonely struggle is probably the most difficult struggle in the world. But it doesn't make their struggle any easier. Some have come back for 10 or 12 years, and they're still dealing. They're telling me that this is not the way they were programmed when they were born. They were programmed that they would live to be old. Their children would bury them and not them having funerals for their children. And so their whole world has been rocked. A storm came into their life and the boat has been so rocked and it never really seems to settle down. And sometimes they feel like everything is happening to them. I was just thinking as I was reading this and preparing for the scripture, each one of you could probably tell us about a storm, about something that happened in your life, and it may be a literal storm. When I was growing up, I grew up in Taylor's. Every time a bad storm would come, especially with thunder and lightning, it would come in our house, it seemed like, and would knock out our refrigerator. Well, we thought something must be going on. And finally, after it happened two or three times, we found out through some investigation that the pole, the power pole coming into our house, was not grounded. So it was just coming straight on in the house. Wow, what a relief it was. But to this very day, I can still see those storms. And that was 60 years ago, some of them. I can still see it happening. You never forget about that. I can hear the refrigerator popping when it hit it. And so the storms always come. It was because we had not found out that there needed to be a ground. Maybe one way we can feel grounded is for us to have our hope in Jesus Christ. For us to know that storms are still going to come, but we're going to be protected from those storms. We used to think every one of those storms was going to kill us. We thought this was going to be the very end. And it never happened. Many times you felt that way, haven't you? That this is the last hope I have, this is the last chance I have, and then you find out that you were rescued in the storm. Here are a group of disciples who have just witnessed one of the highlights of their lives. They saw Jesus take a little boy with 12 loaves, with 5 loaves and 2 fish, give him 5 loaves and 2 fish, divided among 12 people, and they gave it to 5,000 people plus women and children, and everybody ate. They saw that miracle of the magnifying of the food and the multiplying of the food, and so they're at a very high. They get on the boat, and then they're at their lowest point. Life happens that way sometimes. We can't always stay on the mountain. We can't always have great health. We're going to have sickness. We're going to have health problems. We're going to have financial problems. We're going to have family problems. Storms do come. To ignore the fact that storms come is the worst thing we could do. I think sometimes what happens, we think that a storm is not going to happen in our life. And that's what's happened with a lot of people on their finances. It could never happen. I've got it made. I've got job security. I've got everything I need. That fortification is not enough. We see people who thought they had it made do not have. Some people who feel like they're in the best of health are not. It's amazing to me that my mother used to always say, if you want to live a long time, get an ailment and keep going to the doctor. And you know, it might be true. If you ever know somebody that, I see you kind of smiling. And that might be the best way to do it. Because sometimes when you think you're just as healthy as you can be, like my dad was, he's riding along in a car and had a heart attack and died. It's amazing sometimes. So how do we plan for the storms of life? First of all, we need to make sure that we have that we keep our eyes focused on what really counts. I think one of the reasons that that people have such a troubling time with financial problems is that they put their hopes in finances. That's not where you find meaning and purpose in life. I think when everything is taken away from us, it's when we start evaluating and taking an inventory. What really counts in life anyway? My family, my friends, my faith. These are the things that give me buoyancy. These are the things that give me power. These are the things that sustain me every day in life. I was thinking about how we sometimes as fathers like to give the responsibility of raising children to our wives. I remember the story of a man who had a little son that loved to hear the story of the three little pigs. In fact, I just bought an old one of the little golden books, a classic the other day, of the three little pigs. Every kid should know the story of the three little pigs. That should even be taught in schools, Ann. It is such a neat story, and it talks about things that happen when we're not prepared and when our house is not built by the right kind of bricks, when it's made out of straw and sticks. But I think of the story of the three little pigs, and the little boy loved that story. So every night he would ask his dad to read him the story of the three little pigs. The problem was his dad really wanted to read the sports page and the newspaper. So each night he would read the story of the three little pigs to his child. One day as he was walking to work, he heard a recording of the three little pigs. And it was a DVD, and it was telling the story of the three little pigs. And he thought, wow, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get me a DVD and a DVD player, and I'm going to put it by my little boy's bed. And when it comes time, when he starts tugging at me at night when I'm reading the paper, and said, read me the story of three little pigs, I'm going to say, come up to your room. Just see what I've got, Johnny. You won't believe what we've got here. And so sure enough, he tugged his dad's sleeve, said, Dad, would you read me the story of the three little pigs? He said, Johnny, you won't believe. I've done something special for you. Something you couldn't believe any dad would do for you. So he took him upstairs, and he tucked him in the bed, and he started playing the DVD of the three little pigs. The little boy listened to the story. The dad got comfortable reading his paper. He was so proud of what he had done. And so the little boy came down and said, Dad, would you read me the story of the three little pigs? He said, Son, I spent $200 for the DVD player. What's wrong? He said, Dad, that DVD player ain't got no lap. There's nothing that substitutes for our lap, is it? It's the human touch that people long for. They've always longed for it from the beginning of mankind and always will. So as we think about the storms of life, how do we fortify? Where do we find real value in life? And sometimes it's just taking an inventory. Which is the most important, for me to read this newspaper article or for me to spend time with my child? And even we can get involved in things, our work can be it can be very valuable to us. It's our livelihood, but also can be our downfall. The man who grew up here in Greenville, Poe Mill. Anybody know where Poe Mill is? You have to say Poe like you're real poor. You can't say. Anybody know where Poe Mill is in Greenville? I know y'all know where it is. A man by the name of Wayne Oakes grew up over there. He was beaten up when he was a young man because he spoke proper English. Wayne Oakes died in 1999 or 2000 at the age of 84. But Wayne Oakes grew up there, and the kids would beat him up because he spoke proper English, and they didn't think that was the right thing to do. One of our congressmen thought that we needed a senator needed a page in the Senate. And one way of doing this was to get in good with the textile center of the world, which is Greenville, and to ask a young man to be a page who lived on the mill village. And so he chose Wayne Oakes. Wayne Oakes did not know a lot about etiquette, but the senator's wife told him about proper eating and things. Wayne Oakes left there, went on to school, graduated from Princeton, and became professor at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, while at the same time teaching at the University School of Medicine. He wrote more than 20 books on pastoral care. He helped found what is known as CPE, Clinical Pastoral Education, today. He coined a term, workaholic. And he talked about some of us who who are so addicted to our work that we become workaholics. And that that word is used around the world today, and it was coined by him. I think a lot of times it's not that we get involved in bad things, it's that we get too involved in some things that are good when we should be involved in things that are best. As we spend our time with our children, with our families, that's the best time we could spend. The storms of life will come, and sometimes even our best efforts seem to fail. Here is Simon Peter saying, "Lord, if that's really you, now if it's you and not a ghost," remember they thought it was a ghost, "if it's you and not a ghost, why don't you just let me walk out on the water to you?" And Jesus said, "Well, that's fine for me. Just come ahead and walk out to me." So he starts walking out. And it says he saw the wind. Now, you don't really see the wind. Anybody ever said, you ever heard anybody say, "I see the wind"? I say it all the time. Really, you can't see the wind, but you can see the effects of wind, can't you? In fact, the word for spirit, which be Holy Spirit, is in the Hebrew is ruach, which is the same word for wind. It's a force that you can't see, but you can certainly feel. And so it says Simon Peter here said when he saw the wind, he started being afraid, and he took his eyes off Jesus and started looking down. Well, you know what? If I sink every time I take my eyes off of Jesus, I'm going to stay underwater 99% of the time. I wish I could tell you that that's not true, but it's when I start going under the water that I realize where my eyes need to be. What about you? The storms of life are going to come. How are you going to deal with the storms of life? Part of that is for us to make sure that we are doing the right things, that our life is right. I'll give you another story about a little child whose dad I spent a lot of time with him and decided, listen, I need to spend more time with in my yard than I do with my child, and I'm just spending too much time with him. And his child said, "Dad, just spend some time." He said, "Son, you like to work puzzles. I'm going to give you a puzzle." So the dad took a map of the world, and he cut it up into about 25 pieces, and he put it down, and he said, "Son, when you put this map together, you can come out and I'll come in and talk to you. But meanwhile, I'm going to be working in the yard." He thought, "I've got it made. It'll take him at least 2 hours to put that map together. He knows nothing about countries or continents or about states." And so sure enough, he gave his son the puzzle. He laid it out there. And his dad had just gotten started good outside when the son came out to him and said, "Dad, I got the map. I put it together. It's a map of the world." He said, "That's impossible, son. There's no way. Did your mother help you?" He said, "No, I did it by myself." He said, "Well, show me how you did it." He said, "Well, Dad, let me turn the map over. On the back of the map is a picture of a man. And so when I got the man right, the other side, the map, was right. So when I got the man right, the world was right." Is there a message there for us? Our hymn of invitation is hymn 501, "Now Belong to Jesus." Won't you come as we stand? Let's see. Let's sing the first and last stanza of number 501, "Now Belong to Jesus." The doors of the church are open for you to respond.